Hi, I'm Kyla.
And this is Jay.
And you're listening to Strange Fruit by WFPL.
Welcome back to listeners. First of all, happy Black History Month.
Yeah, well, not quite.
Yeah, well, girl, when this airs, it'll be February when
this
airs.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yes. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so, happy Black History Month, everybody.
Okay, happy Black History Month. Yes.
People, you know, you give away our secrets. We usually record our podcast on Wednesdays. You all usually hear it on Friday or Saturday. And so I'll try to be like, you know, this week.
Yeah, but it's too clever for me.
Today's only Wednesday.
I overthink stuff. So I'm like, no, it's not.
Yeah, it's not February. Three more days.
Okay, so anyway. Ngawa Black Power. Yes.
Yeah, Ngawa Black Power. So anyway, happy Black History Month, y'all. Yes. This whole entire month, we're going to be doing some really, really black stuff. It's going to be just all black everything. But we're really excited. I'm excited to have a very special guest in the studio today. A real life hot topic. Yes. Welcome to the show, Sasha Renee.
What's going on? Thank you.
Now, Sasha, our local listeners obviously already know who you are, but for out-of-town listeners who don't know, you are one of Louisville's favorite femcees, one of Louisville's favorite hip-hop artists. But go ahead and tell our listeners a bit about yourself. Introduce yourself to our listeners for those folks who don't already know you.
Yeah, I'm a hip-hop soul artist. I'm from Louisville. I've been doing it in this scene for about 8 years, starting in 2010, releasing my first little song, getting in the studio for the first time. As of late, I released an EP last year. The I Am Sasha Renee EP that's available on iTunes, Spotify, Tidal, all that good stuff for y'all to check out. And I'm currently working on another EP, and I just released a new single titled My City from
Indeed.
There.
Yes. We're going to talk about that later, and we're actually going to end this episode, y'all, of our podcast. Usually we have our Stevie Wonder song. We're going to end. Mm-hmm. We're going to play your song for our listeners.
Okay,
let me tell y'all why I rocks with Sasha. Doc, and you and Missy can have this too, because you know, like, Sasha's the person I can always call on, like, yo, you want to perform? And so, you know, I did Missy this way too. Y'all remember Louisville Pride? They called me, like, we want to do a black stage.
Yes.
And of course, I work in the restaurant business, so I could not always be there. So I'm like, you know, I get Missy to come perform, and I'm doing a Tommy Chanel. Like, hey, Sasha, like, y'all want to perform in the Pride? And so apparently it was like a big fiasco, and it did not go well.
Got so
but Sasha's so cool. He's like, but she did not beat me. Sasha did not cuss me
out.
Yeah, but you know, but so Sasha's always down.
I was mad though.
So I know you were. And I felt so bad. I'm like, Sasha's so cool, but you not cuss me out. You not beat me up. And then you performed at our 200th anniversary party,
yes,
didn't you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Our featured entertainment, y'all. So if you were at our party in the summertime, you had to see Sasha live in person. But anyway, y'all, so I rocks with Sasha, coolest person around. But yeah, tell us a bit about how you got into you consider yourself a rapper, a hip hop artist, or what do you consider, like, what's the proper
Hip hop soul artist? Because okay. I do a little bit of singing too. You'll never hear like a full like R&B soul track from me, but I always kind of sprinkle it in
a
here.
A little bit
and
of
there.
Trap soul and things of that nature.
Like, yeah, okay. A little bit of that lately.
Have you always been a music? Like, were you always musically inclined as a young person? Like, what? How did you know? Like,
did you just love music when you were young and as a kid? I mean, did you sing and your mama and your parents was like, oh my god?
As Chris, they'd be like, come in here and rap for everybody, Sasha. Like,
okay.
What led you to this music?
Yeah, all of that. So I grew up in a hip-hop household. My mama was more so listening to like Erykah Badu, Lauryn Hill, Jill Scott. Pops listening to Jay-Z, Nas, a little bit of Tupac and Biggie when I was really young.
Yeah.
So I grew up in a hip-hop household, and I definitely fell in love with it at a very young age. And I remember writing my first song when I was 10 years old. It was a song. It was called Problems. I remember the hook and everything because I actually...
Let's hear it.
hold on. Let me get a beat going.
Okay.
Look, we got problems, yeah. We got problems, we need to solve them and change the world. We ain't gonna make it, I can't take it. We got problems, yeah. Yeah, it was something like that.
I love
that.
You know, this is 10 years old? Oh, yes. No. Okay, round of applause.
I love that.
Thank you. I had three full 16-bar verses written, and I would have my little brother perform the hook, and we would go, we first like presented to like my big sister and my mom and daddy and stuff, and then they would have us do it. So I've been making songs for a long, long time, y'all.
So you feel at home on the stage. That's your, like, do you still get butterflies when you perform? Do you still get nerves? Or do you feel like at this point that you're kind of like...
Yeah, my anxiety's really high. So every time it's pretty much like day one again. So
Who are some of the folks of any gender, you know, that you, I mean, you mentioned people you listen to when you were younger, but especially, is there a woman hip-hop or soul artist that you like? Or who are some of the men that inspire you? Who are some of the people that you really enjoy their art?
I mean, growing up, it was Lauryn Hill. I was all about it. So definitely with moving back and forth, like from singing and rapping, I definitely took from her with that. But most currently, man, I listen to mostly local music, to be honest. But as far as industry artists, I'm listening to Dreezy. She's a FemC, and okay. She's really dope. She just dropped a track called Spar. Okay. Y'all should listen to that. She's talking about sparring with Donald Trump and, you know, getting into some stuff. And then Rap City. She's finally getting her due. She was nominated, I think, for a Grammy her album and stuff. So
and Rhapsody, by the way, is in Yaba's Dr. Yaba Blaze season one of Professional Black Girls.
Yeah, and then and actually it was so cute because me and Sasha were talking about that in the comments because I shared Yaba recently shared the bloopers of season one.
Outtakes,
So she could, you know, promote the idea of that she's recording season two right now in New Orleans. And Rhapsody was in an episode where she has her own episode in season one. And I love Rhapsody. I've never had the pleasure of meeting her. But Yaba just know everybody, child. And then Yaba, I feel like, was in her video, her recent video. Okay. And Yaba's like dancing and getting buck in it a little bit for a quick period of time. But she was in there.
So you like Rhapsody? Yeah, Rhapsody.
Yes, I've been listening to Rhapsody, I think, since I pretty much got started, 2009, 2010, is when I first heard her. So to finally see her, like, on that platform, I'm like, ooh, it take a long time, but eventually you'll get there, you know? And I think she's, like, 32, 33 years old, so it gives me, you know, being 26, I'm like, okay.
It's realistic. Grammy
Well, no. Who are some of the local acts that you listen to? You mentioned that you like some local talent and local artists.
Rob Lee, he's an R&B singer. I really, really like his stuff.
Oh, yeah. He's a cutie pie, too. I haven't heard him, but I've seen his pictures and stuff, yeah.
Yes, Rob Lee, one of my closest friends, Corey Black, she's an R&B singer.
Yes.
I'm always listening to her music. Hip-hop artists, just outside of the studio, he just knocked on a window, walked past. His name is Don B.
Okay.
He's a super, super dope, like, lyricist. Okay. I would compare him to, like, like a Kendrick J. Cole type vibe as far as how he approaches music. So, Otis Jr. I don't know if y'all familiar with Otis.
I love to see them perform. Yeah, he and his band and such.
Yes, they do their thing. So it's a lot of dope local talent.
Wonderful. Now, for listeners who don't know, you have a boo. Now, your boo's been on our show twice. In fact, your boo was just here. How many weeks ago, Doc? Like two or three weeks
ago? 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Your boo is Tyla, Talisha Wilson, who has been on our show. Y'all been together for how long?
We celebrate our 2-year anniversary on the 11th.
Happy anniversary.
Yes. Thank you.
Interestingly enough, you have not always identified as LGBT over the course of your career. Can you talk a bit about that journey? Because you weren't necessarily LGBT, or at least out as an LGBT artist until recent years. Talk a bit about your journey in that regard and how it's being a queer artist in hip hop.
Yeah, so I made the transition really with Talisha. So maybe just about 2.5 years ago, I went ahead and came out. Before then, I was maybe single for about 2 years and kind of warming up to the thoughts of what I really wanted to do with myself. Yeah. And again, that anxiety was kind of holding me back. But before then, I was in a relationship with my high school sweetheart, who was a guy.
Yeah.
And we were together for about 5 or 6 years. So I hadn't really explored since, you know what I'm saying, being in high school and stuff like that and really figuring myself out. I was always really fluid in my presentation and kind of my personality. People always knew me as like the tomboy and stuff like that. But I wasn't really fluid openly in my sexuality until recently. I was nervous about it, really more so than personally, but for my music. Like, my fans are used to listening to me, you know, admire men in my music when I'm getting sexual, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what they're used to. So for me, it was like, OMG, like, we about to take it from one extreme to the next. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I just didn't know how people would receive it. And I do have an entire new fan base, but it's still good.
Yeah.
And, like, I haven't suffered at all because of it. You know what I'm saying? As far as my career goes, I feel like I have a better shot actually now because it just makes me more unique and stand out a little bit more.
It makes you feel more authentic as an artist to, you know, to reveal, because I think that we all know there are people in hip-hop who are child out of the closet, right? And we all kind of like listen to that song. It's like, Neo, you ain't singing about no woman. Or whomever, allegedly. You know, but I think that when you have someone like, that's my appreciation for people like Fly Young Red and either, other queer hip hop artists, even if their music sucks, at least you're keeping it real, right?
Very true.
Do you think that it gives you more authenticity to be honest? Because you could have very easily have had a girlfriend but kept rapping about dudes, right? But would that have felt fake to you?
And a lot of artists do it. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I pride myself on just being true to myself and my music. Like, you've always been able to listen to my music and know, like, oh, that's real. Like, she really had that experience, or she's talking about something like I'm not just making stuff up when I write my music. So I have to be true to myself. So I knew I was going to have to make that transition, not only in my personal life, but with my music as well. So,
And you said it's been a positive reception of it, right? So since being an out hip hop artist, right, that it's been, your music's been well received. And you also host, every Thursday you host Vibe Open Mics.
Uh-huh, yes.
So the folks that congregate there and come to Vibe Open Mics, how has the reaction been about you being the host and you being an openly, you know, black lesbian woman, artist?
It's been a little different because I'm a little bit more conscious now, too. Mm. And I'm affected by things I wasn't affected by before. So, like, we have comedians come on, and a big issue sometimes is these homophobic jokes.
Yeah.
So I find myself having to have conversations with comedians and different artists and stuff, and letting them know, you know, if you want to continue to perform on this platform, we got to do things a little bit differently because we're growing. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. As people, we're learning things and we're growing and we're realizing, okay, this is not okay. Yeah.
Why is that important to you? Because I think, like, and that's, you know, like we were talking about Monique, you know, last week or whatever, mm-hmm. and people, you know, all the gays that came up from Monique, but in her comedy, and I know that she supported gay people, but with one of her comedy acts, she does a really lewd number about gay boys being fags, and you know, and this is really reductive, and so I get people who are like, well, it's just comedy, right? It's just art. Like, I don't really mean that stuff, you know, so why not just give them a pass and say, oh, that's just comedy? Like, why is it important to you that they don't get up there on that stage and tell homophobic jokes or transphobic jokes? Why does that matter to you?
Well, it's a reflection of myself because it's my platform. Yeah. So when I have people in my audience literally pull me to the side and have a conversation with me, I'm like, okay, like, you know, I need to make sure that I stay on top of this stuff because I don't want people coming and feeling like they're not in a safe space with me. You know what I'm saying? So, I think there is a line between, like, healthy comedy, like, really good comedy. And I think you can make some gay jokes here and there. You know what I'm saying? That can be funny. But
gay people is funny.
Yeah.
Especially lesbians. Y'all funny as shit. Yes, lesbians are
definitely
funny.
Definitely,
yes.
But I think
how are lesbians funny?
Oh, yeah. I
mean, explain.
Y'all just funny.
Why are we
funny? I laugh at you all the time. I don't know, but I laugh at you all the time, girl. You crack me up. Like, all the lesbians I know are, like, hella funny. Oh, well, Rosie O'Donnell. Like, let's name the lesbian comedians.
Is Rosie O'Donnell funny?
Well, yeah, let's name, like, all the lesbian comedians, and then let's name all the gay men comedians, and we basically have none.
Okay, yeah.
Well, you basically have Eddie Murphy. Like,
Ellen.
Oops.
Oh, that was Shade.
Yeah.
Okay, that was Shade.
Wanda Sykes.
Ellen.
Rosie O'Donnell, I guess.
Paula Poundstone. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Y'all have a lot.
Yeah. Okay, yeah,
anyway,
anyway.
But yeah, back to that, yeah.
Okay, yes.
So it's important to you that people come to your stuff, your show to feel comfortable. I really, really love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's good stuff. I'm really just so, like, what is your ultimate, you know, we mentioned that maybe, like, rap scene, you'll be Grammy nominated. Like, what for you would be a measure of success? Like, do you want to be on do they still have, like, BET and MTV Raps and videos and stuff like that?
I don't feel like they have MTV Raps, but I feel like they, and videos aren't circulated in the ways in which they used to be.
Okay.
Like
we're
in
old.
The 90s.
Yeah, we used to, like, watch, like, 106.
Yeah, like,
but do you, like, want to have, like, a viral video? Do you want to be on the red carpet of the Grammys? Do you want to be, like, a platinum album? What for you? Or are you cool with just being whatever, you know, level comes to you?
I definitely want to go as far as I can with it. So, like, that's the goal. Like, if I can be nominated for a Grammy one day, like, that's definitely goals. But I definitely feel successful where I am now. And that's kind of, I know we're going to talk about the single a little bit later, but that's kind of where I was coming from on my new track, was like, I just kind of want to celebrate my current success a little bit more and not become so discouraged because I'm not, I haven't reached those, like, end goals. You know what I'm saying? I've been doing it for a while now, and I would have thought, like, when I first started, like, do this for 2-3 years, then boom, I'm out of here. I'm on. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's your mentality, like, going in, but that's not reality. But I definitely feel successful. When I'm definitely okay if I never make it to the Grammys, I'm okay with that because I know I've impacted a lot of people and I'm still doing a lot of dope stuff out here. So,
tell us about your latest single. Tell us about, it's called My City.
Uh-huh.
And one, tell our audience how they can get it, how they can access it. They're gonna get a piece of it, a preview of it at the end of the show today. But what inspired you to write a song? Why do you call it My City? Yeah. Right in the video, you're like riding around in Louisville.
Yes, Doc was here singing the hook before you walked in. Yeah. She was there jamming and she was there twerking.
Yeah.
I'm like, girl,
I love it.
Like, yes. You're not professional in the studio.
First of all, I was not twerking.
I was just
jamming in my seat. I was not twerking.
Okay.
I don't know how to twerk and I wish I did.
It's called My City and it's about Louisville, obviously, yes.
Well, it's really more so about me and my position within Louisville and continuing to put on for the city and being okay with the fact that my role might be to put on for Louisville culture. You know what I'm saying? I think that I'm a part of, like, changing the narrative here outside of just, you know, my music. So that's really what my city is about. I'm reminding myself to not doubt myself, because a lot of times I get caught up into that. Like, oh, my Jesus, just 5 years ago I was sitting on a couch right next to Bryson every day in the studio, and now I'm watching him.
Bryson Tiller.
Bryson Tiller. And now I'm watching him on the Grammys, and it's, like, mind-blowing. And
with,
like,
honor, no less. Yes.
Hey, okay. It's exciting. Yes. At the same time, it's like, Jesus, am I ever going to get to that point? Yeah. So I have to remind myself why I'm doing it and just stay encouraged, because it's hard, especially when you're not making that dollar for the amount of work you're putting in. Because, you know, a lot of times I find myself, I'm like, I'm working just as hard as these people that's making millions and millions of dollars doing this. So
being a struggling artist.
You know, with the Vibe platform and all the other things I do in the city, I'm just trying to put on for us. Like, at the end of the day, if I don't make it to the Grammys, it's going to be an honor for me to be able to be like, hey, I contributed to a lot of these other dope artists and where they are today.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that. Yeah. Well, before you go, Sasha, I want you to stick around. I have a special topic for Hot Topics to both of you. So there's this story out of Salt Lake City, Utah. There were three police officers who were fired for taking bribes. They were taking bribes in order to not write parking tickets. So there's a pizza restaurant called Cecilia Pizza and Kitchen. And apparently the owner had arranged with these cops that anytime, you know, they wanted to ticket the owner or an employee or even a customer, that they would not give that person a ticket. And in exchange, the pizza place would give them a pizza. Right?
Okay.
So, yeah. So basically they had a whole system in place where they would put a menu in the bottom left corner of the windshield. And if a cop saw a menu in that windshield, he would not write a ticket, but instead he'd come to the counter and be like, yeah, let me get that pizza. And they only got caught because there was a rookie cop who actually did ticket the owner, and the owner complained. And so then the whole scheme, like, got you know, blown up. Those cops got fired. But it was to the tune of $19,000 worth of parking tickets he was able to forego in exchange for pizza.
Oh, wow.
So my question for you all is, if y'all were cops, which, you know, we never would be, what could people bribe you with to not write parking tickets?
To not ride parking
whether
tickets.
Whether it be food, whether it be like clothing item, whether it be like
a... First of
like
all, animal. Is it time to get a job and commit crime on top of it? I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah, I know,
like,
right?
Like, no.
Yeah, but no, but just say you were a cop, you know, this is all for fun. And I said to you, don't write me a parking ticket and I will give you this. What could I do to bribe you with to not... What luxury item, what item do you really crave that I could give you to not write me a parking ticket? Or Sasha, if you have an idea, what could I give you?
I mean... I'm going to be honest, I would have took the food as well.
Yeah, maybe Reese's Cups.
Reese's Cups, okay.
Reese's Cups, stickers.
Stickers or Snickers?
Stickers. Like,
girl,
stickers.
Girl, I can buy you some stickers.
Girl, stickers I can stick on my notepads and all of my school supplies. Yes, okay. I love stickers.
Stickers,
I
Reese's
love
Cups.
Any kind of school supply.
Okay, yes.
Good pens.
You really do. You like ink pens. You like Post-it notes.
Very creative, okay. Pretty folders. Yeah. Different planners. Like,
so candy and arts and crafts, and you basically going to turn a blind eye to
criminal
activity.
Unicorn stuff. Okay. Unicorn stuff.
Okay. Sasha, so, what are we blind your silence with? What is it going to take to get you to turn a blind eye to my crimes?
Edibles.
Okay. Ooh, okay. Okay. Edibles.
No, for real.
Only in states where it's legal, of course. Yes.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. That part. Hard to come across. So definitely would take that. I don't know. Maybe in exchange for like an opportunity, like, hey, don't give us any parking tickets. You can do a show here, like at the Mercury Ballroom or something nice like that.
Okay.
I could see doing that for sure. But I mean, if I was a police officer, I would not want to give anybody a parking ticket anyway.
Yeah.
So an excuse to not do
that. Are there certain crimes, because, you know, it's all arbitrary, there's certain crimes that you all would overlook if you were a cop?
But that's what I'm saying.
I mean, like,
it's hard
murder,
to even
imagine. You kind of got to do something about murder, but anything else, I feel like, is, like, fair game.
What are you talking about?
Like, if I'm a cop, as long as you don't murder nobody, I will probably let you slide. Or, like, beat somebody.
Girl,
you know, but if you're like, oh, if you shoplift, I'd be like, oh, don't do it again. If you, like, run red lights, I'll be, you know, I don't.
Like, no.
No, I'd be like a vigilante cop.
No, for this fantasy question, first of all, because it's like, one, nobody in here is interested. Nor has ever desired. I can't even get
girl,
into
I knew
it.
You would not be able to play along correctly.
Play
you cannot
along
play along correctly
because
you're like,
just,
oh, first of all, I would not be a cop.
I'm like outraged by the suggestion of the fans.
Okay.
Like, no.
Okay. If you are a principal, if you are a principal of a high school.
And do I like K-12?
Oh, my God.
That's another thing. No. If I were famous.
Okay.
If I were famous, well, then I guess that doesn't work.
It doesn't fit my scenario. Okay, well, but thanks for ruining this hot topic question. I was really proud of myself.
Oh, my God. I didn't ruin it.
I worked really hard. And before you got here, I was like, oh, my God. Well, I had this really cool article I was going to share. I had a really good question. And I never tell doctor questions in advance. And like, I wouldn't tell you. And I'd be really excited, you know, for my little bitty questions because I love my pop culture. You know, but that's what best friends are for, to shoot you down. Best friends are lovers to chop you down to size. You know, and so I really appreciate the way which my best friends support me through this podcast. It basically was like, your question's trash, so I won't play along.
Thanks, Doc. I love you so much. But I said stickers.
All right.
And Reese's.
Okay, whatever. Yeah, thank you. So, Sasha, okay. It's been a delight to have you here. Have you had fun?
I have. Thank you so much. Will you come back again soon? Absolutely.
Let our listeners know how they can find you on social media if they want to come to a show or if they want to come to the next vibe. How can folk keep up with you and hunt you down?
I have done a good job of making sure I'm everywhere, y'all. Okay. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Then there are the music platforms.
Okay.
Everywhere at Sasha Renee Music. SashaRenee. Sasha Renee Music everywhere. Spotify, Tidal, iTunes, Apple Music. Wherever y'all stream music, you can find some Sasha Renee.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. Doc, let's take a quick break. When we come back, y'all, we have a really entertaining interview, but we'll be right back. Let's take a quick break. Doc, let the folk know who we are.
You're listening to Strange Fruit by WFPL.
Strange Fruit is produced by Louisville Public Media in Louisville, Kentucky. Here's what you can hear on some of LPM's other podcasts this week.
I'm Sean Cannon, and this week on the guest list, Martha Kelly, star of the TV show Baskets, talks about how her co-star, Zach Galifianakis, kept her from quitting the show.
A lot of people would have said, F you, you ungrateful dip, you know? I'm offering you a regular role on a TV show, and he didn't. He just said, like, yeah, you don't have to do anything you're not comfortable with.
That's on the next edition of the guest list. Steer into it.
Welcome back. You're listening to Strange Fruit by WFPL.
All right, listeners. So just a word of warning. This next feature interview is very entertaining, very insightful, but it's also a little bit risque. There's some grown folk language. Not for me, but from you and our feature interview. So if you have some little people in the room or you have sensitive ears, be forewarned. But I promise you all will enjoy it. So let's check it out. So, Doc, there's been a lot of great conversations recently. I think, you know, there was She's Gotta Have It. The reboot of She's Gotta Have It, that really talked a lot about sexuality and different types of relationships and really, you know, forcing, I think, some Black people to have conversations about the different ways we relate to one another and those kind of things. So I was checking out TheRoot.com and saw a really, really cool think piece written by a wonderful poet named Carla J. Lacey. It was called Why I'm Open to Dating Bisexual Men. And this think piece, child, has gone viral. It's brilliant, but it's gone viral, of course. The blog's called a piece of it, and we're going to talk about all those things. So listeners, welcome to the show, Carla J. Lacey.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. So before we get started, we know someone who knows you. There's a really wonderful poet here named Lance Newman, who's here in Louisville.
Lance is the homie. With eyebrows.
Yeah. Yes. So he's like, yeah, y'all have a Kyla on your show. So anyway, he sends his regards.
Oh, hi, Lance. How are you, my love? I haven't seen Lance since the last time I was in Kentucky, which was June.
All right, so we got to come back soon. But yeah. So Kyla, tell us the piece that you wrote for TheRoot.com talked about your willingness, your openness to dating bisexual men. Talk to us a bit about what led you to write that piece and what you sought to illustrate in writing that piece.
Well, what actually happened was a couple of years ago, I dated a man that I put money on it that he's BL, not bisexual, he's BL. Because I know that there is a distinction between the two. And I know that even though they, you know, kind of the lines can be blurred, there is a distinction. And so a friend of mine was like, you know, asked me, oh, did you ever, you know, think that such and such? And I was like, yeah, you know, I mean, in hindsight. And so then I was recounting the story to someone else. And she was like, oh, I would be so angry. And I was like, over what? Like, it doesn't have anything to do with me. Like, I'm like, I am not dating them anymore, you know. And so I was like, if, you know, and just being you know, having a lot of friends, you know, male gay friends who, you know, recounted, you know, how many straight men, quote unquote, they've been with, you know, I'm kind of like, I don't understand why I would be immune to having had any relation with a man who's had sex with, you know, another man. Like, that's probability wise, it's nil, you know, it's like not nil, but it's so likely for it to have happened. And so instead of being upset about it, you know, I just think those aren't things that I can control. I think, you know, there's male ego as well as there's female ego. And I think women, we put so much stock into what men like, not understanding that men have the ability to like more than one thing, too. You know, I had an ex-boyfriend who used to date, you know, we dated for on and off for 4 years, and his baby mama is ugly as shit. They don't mean I'm ugly as shit. You know, it just means that, you know, it's what he got pregnant, you know, it's that's life, you know. And so I think we always, as women, try to internalize, well, you know, like if a man cheats on you, you know, we always say, well, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? Instead of, what did he do wrong?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so for me, I just, it wasn't something that I would have to that I just decided that I wasn't going to internalize as my battle. Like, it has nothing to do with me. You know, I think we all want these cookie cutter relationships that just don't exist. And not everybody is going to have everything that you want. Instead of making that a deal breaker, I would just rather have somebody who's honest with me about it. Is it my personal preference? No, but I mean, it's not a deal breaker. And I think for a lot of women, it's a deal breaker, and it's not for me, because at the end of the day, the only difference would be that I would know about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There, and I mean, I completely agree with you, Kyla. There's, and I just really, really loved, and I love the piece so much. My favorite part is the part where you say women will put up with no jobs, multiple ugly kids, multiple baby mamas, multiple other women, even wives, but let them be bisexual or sexually fluid.
And then it's a wrap.
And then it's a complete wrap. Why do you think, you know, that a lot of women will put up with all of those aforementioned things, right? Baby mamas, other women while they're dating, right? But they're not in a polyamorous relationship. They're supposed to be in a monogamous relationship. So dealing with things like no money, no...
Because most of those things can be deemed as temporary.
Mm.
Why is this man on my ass like this? Most of these things can be deemed as temporary. Whereas if you... you know, date a man with, you know, baby mama issues, that might change. You know, she might, you know, and not only that, he don't see his kids that often anyway, kind of thing. Yeah. You know, you date a dude with no job. Okay, he can eventually get a job. Oh, you know, I can change him and he can stop cheating on me. These are things that women view that can change. But at the end of the day, I can't change a man who likes another man. That's not something that I can change. That's not something that I can overcome. And so instead of accepting that, a lot of women put stock into thinking that we are going to change people. Like, people don't change. They adapt. You know, they do what's best for them. And so instead of making it my mission to change somebody, you know, it's, you would want somebody to be honest with you and say, these are things that I can work through. Like, so I think those things are, I feel like I always want to tell women, like, your pussy is not going to cure world hunger. It's not.
Yes.
And I think women think that way. I think that we think that, oh, I can make him do this if I love him harder, if I do this and this and this. And, you know, I lived with somebody and I worked two jobs and that nigga worked my nerves. And that was the only job he had. And he was very good at it.
Yeah.
But I thought that if I loved him harder, that he would be a better person.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think when he would cheat on me and he would just do me all these wrong kind of ways, I internalized that, like, maybe I'm not doing something correctly or I'm not loving hard enough. And that's not, you know, love isn't supposed to be this battle back and forth. It's supposed to be this beautiful thing that you both realize that, you know, we're both just trying to make it through this world together. And so I think that's what it was. It was like, you know, why would I sacrifice the love of a beautiful person over something that has nothing to do with me?
Absolutely. I want to ask you both. I wonder, to what degree do you all think that social pressures and social influences dictate women's desires or, you know, undesires to date by men? So, for example, I think about people like Bobby Valentino, Eddie Murphy, allegedly, all these kind of celebrity men we know of, who've allegedly been caught, you know, with either trans women or other dudes.
It was alleged.
And, well, yeah, you know, we got to say we don't trying to get sued, but you know, but yet they still got girlfriends, still got wives, right? So once you know it's out there, the public shame passes. They still got their women folk. Do you think that women are more ashamed or more worried about what will my homegirls think if they find out my dude mess with dudes? Do you think that it's more really about social influence and it really is about a woman's lack of desire to be with the bi man?
Yeah. I think it's a combination. So okay. One, those men that you mentioned also, you know, make more money than the average person.
True.
So,
yeah.
You know, people put up with things that they, you know, may deem uncomfortable for money. But, you know, I think we live in such a male-centric society where, you know, the alpha male and machismo are, you know, even though they're not, they can be so toxic. Those are things that we're still attracted to. We're still attracted to manly, you know, manliness. And so if, you know, the thought of your man being penetrated, it's a weakness at that point. It's something that, you know, people feel like, oh, you know, this person is tarnished. This person is ruined. This person is no longer masculine. And I think that that's just a stupid way to feel, yeah. For sure. You know, it has nothing to do with the price of tea in China. But I think that that has a lot of influence on, you know, my man is no longer manly, you know, because of these things. And I think that, you know, people, oh, well, you know, well, now I can't trust him, you know, at all. And I'm like, you know, if somebody gonna cheat on you, he gonna cheat on you. Like, he don't need your permission. He don't need to let you know what he like to do it. If, yeah. You know, there's nothing gonna stop him from cheating on you. I mean, and I think that's the difference is, again, women will put up with a man cheating on women, 10 different women, but let him have had sex with a man 10 years ago, then it's a wrap.
I completely agree. I do. I think that it's a lot of outside pressure from society, families. I really like in the piece, Kyla, where you talk about how, you know, black women specifically in particular, you know, kind of police and scrutinize the idea of sexual fluidity when it comes to
absolutely.
That of black men. So I really appreciated that because I think oftentimes when we think about the myth of the DL or we think about sexual fluidity within black men, it's this idea that, you know, they're lying, they're liars, they're hiding these things. Or in the men that you mentioned, Jay, who are, you know, quote unquote, allegedly trans attracted, for instance, there's all of this shaming, scrutiny and policing, not only by society that's homophobic, transphobic, tries to create bi invisibility, but also within our own community and within our own personal circles and relationships. So, you know, I think that in order for there to be much more of a welcoming environment for black men to articulate, hey, I'm bisexual, hey, I'm sexually fluid,
black
women
have to do the work too.
I think so too. I mean, I completely agree.
Can you both talk a bit about what is perceived as a double standard? So you mentioned in your piece, Kyla and Doc, you've talked about this before, that women are allowed to kind of, you know, mess with other women, and you know it's never seen as taken away from their femininity or from, you know, like we know plenty of folk who was dating women for a long time, all of a sudden now they're straight again, right? And no one ever says somehow she's any less straight because she messed with a girl in college, right? But again, as you mentioned, a dude messing around one time in high school. So what do you all make of that double standard? And you know, in Doc, you talk about the fact that people don't find women sexually threatening, and that's why. But can you talk, Doc, a bit about that, and then I want to hear Kyla's reaction.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I really liked, you mentioned the Kinsey scale in your piece, Kyla, like, and talking about how sexuality exists on a continuum. And I think it has everything to do, I mean, it has to do with homophobia, yes, but it also really has to do with misogyny and sexism. So women's sexuality isn't seen as active. It is seen as reactive and not dominant or aggressive because there's no phallus. So people really think that when women have sex with one another, it's, well, they're just messing around, or it's chicks or girls messing around. So they don't give agency and power to female sexuality in the same ways they imbue it for men. And so although we live in a homophobic society, you would think, which attempts to emasculate or, you know, take away masculinity from gay men or bisexual men, because misogyny is so pervasive within our society, they still see two men having sex with one another as much more aggressive submissive, dominant, and powerful. And so therefore, you could basically sleep with 300 women, and if you suck one dick, you basically are gay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, and vice versa. For women, you could sleep with 400 women, and you, the one time you sleep with a man, oh, so you basically straight. That was basically a phase.
Yeah.
So it's like, what? And people don't even... I think that the problem is people don't even, and that's why your piece is so revelatory in the sense that you actually allow your reader to sit there and think and pause a moment instead of just parroting something they've already said, something that's in popular culture or TV. You allow the reader to really kind of, let me think about this. Why am I so against men being bisexual? Why do I make it seem as if bisexuality in men can't exist, but I accept it in women? You know, so I mean, you bring up all those questions that are just so important and necessary, I think, for us as a community really to move forward to accept all types of sexualities.
Yeah, and I think, too, when it's two women, I think there is no, you know, women are seen as to be dominated. But, you know, I think still when it's two women, there's an equal exchange of energy versus a man is always dominating a woman, you know, heterosexual. And I think with men, it's that okay, who's being dominated?
Yeah,
who's the bottom?
Yeah.
You know, that's always the question.
That obsession,
and I think you know, that's so much that's wrapped up into how we view sex. We view sex as a power exchange instead of an energy exchange.
Absolutely, yeah.
So MediaTakeout.com, which is the world's most popular child, legendary black blog, they stay baiting the children. Like, they stay with the clickbaits, and especially when it comes to LGBT issues, child. I love them for, like, you know, they raise the kids, they have the celebrity gossip. When it comes to LGBT issues in particular, they always get it wrong. So they get a hold of your piece, Kyla, and their headline, y'all, listeners, is Black Feminist says that black women need to date bisexual men. Now, first of all, that ain't what you said. You know, that
they clearly changed it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They said that, black women should date bisexual men.
No, it was originally need. And then I said, no, we're not going to do this. Go ahead, take that down. And then they changed it to should.
Yeah.
And I said, no. I don't think you know what take down means. I said, listen, I got a meeting at 3:00. But after that, I got all the time. So we could do this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they knew they were wrong. And I think, you know, for me, I didn't want to be a shitty ally, you know, as a, you know, a cisgender heterosexual woman. You know, I still recognize that the little scrutiny that I did receive is nothing in comparison to what people have to go through on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You know, and even where the point I was like, my mom was in the comments. And I was like, oh, boy. And I'm very fortunate because, you know, my mother is very liberal and very, like, you know, I mean, I was raised by a black atheist. Woman, you know, so, but she's always been very accepting of, you know, friends that I've had that are gender neutral or bisexual or gay. She's always been, you know, like, come on in, you know, and so I was very fortunate that I didn't have to necessarily deal with it in terms of, like, a mama reading this.
Yeah.
you know, but, because there's also, when you write articles, there's still a level of anonymity.
Certainly.
You know, even though it has my first, middle, and last name, there's a difference between having, you know, an article and having my actual picture.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of my favorite pictures, but it was, you know, an actual picture of me on their site, you know, that they had, you know, gone through my pictures to look for. And so that was a little bit a different feel. And I just, I was very irritated because they had, I knew that they did it on purpose, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, whereas they exposed me to an audience that is knowingly, you
hostile,
know,
absolutely hostile,
and habitually, you know, transphobic, biphobic, you know, homophobic, you know, it's just an audience that is habitually gross and they're ignorant.
Yeah.
So I think that was my big thing. Like, you know, y'all don't realize, you know, there are people on the other end of this. And I definitely have a sharp tongue, but I think it was just kind of like, you know, y'all are really, you know, doing something with this ridiculosity. That's my word. I made it up.
Yes.
I know. But yeah, so I think that was my issue. It was like, I felt like they purposely, you know, introduced me to an audience that was, you know, and then you got the RGBs, you know, with the, you know, this kind of stuff.
The whole taps.
Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, Nigga, you don't even wash.
Yeah, exactly. You just put on patchouli oil. Just put on more patchouli oil, yeah.
Right, you smell like patchouli and struggle. Get out of here.
Yes.
Yeah, and those conversations, I mean, media takeout, I mean, every now and again for the key effect, but they're routinely and consistently homophobic, transphobic. And I don't know why I don't know why media takeout and other sites like that, that are primarily black sites that go, you know, are promoted to black audiences, want to remain in this kind of reductive prism when it comes to sexuality and gender specifically. Yeah. They always want to. Yeah, I mean, I think that's
it's the lowest hanging fruit. I mean, again, if you think about the audience, I mean, you know, like I always, you know, like you got, like you mentioned the hoteps or the RBGs on Facebook. The first thing is, oh, look at these FAGSs. I look at these trying to, you know, the conspiracy against black men. It's so easy and so reductive. It doesn't take very much thought to blame.
And
all the woes on gay people, right? It's such low-hanging fruit, and it's so juvenile, and it's so reductive.
And then, you know, when you're one of your greatest enemies is smart black women.
Yeah,
you have to consider, like, why do these smart women intimidate me?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's definitely a lot. It was definitely a lot.
Well, I'll tell you what, Kyla, it has been an absolute delight talking to you. First of all, thank you so much. And I agree with you that people really are intimidated by brilliant, smart women. I'm so thankful to know so many of you all and have you all on our show. So
thank
you for your brilliant piece. We're so glad to have we have the Kyla connection because you and my best friend got the same name. We got the Lance connection because y'all all poets. So you're basically like an honorary Louisvillian, okay? So please come back to Louisville soon and say hello to us.
Thanks so much, Kyla.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Thanks, Kyla.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
All right. So thanks to Kyla and thanks to Sasha for being here today. Both really, really wonderful conversations.
Yeah, it was really cool. Fun.
And just for the record, listeners, you know, I think I might have cussed. I think I might have said S-H-I-T. We were talking to Sasha. But beyond that, you know, I probably said the least amount of cuss words of the episode today.
Yes.
And you really were a potty mouth today.
I was not. I mean,
which our listeners don't really get to see. They don't get a purview into your real life. They don't understand that you really are really a potty mouth. Like you know, because you be, you know, putting on your, you know. You be,
I do.
You
know, I put on my
airs. I've got your story on the radio. It's like, girl, you are a trash-talking sailor.
I am not a sailor. Yeah. I mean, very much more Whitney Houston.
Did you see that? Whitney Houston realness. Did you see the article I posted a few weeks ago about, like, they said the people who curse a lot are actually smarter?
Yes.
You know, and I remember my brother used to wash my mouth out with soap. I remember I called my cousin the N-word. I was like, probably like 6 or 7.
I really have worked all my life to be good at cursing. I started cursing in like 3rd or 4th grade.
Really?
Yeah, because a lot
of kids.
Like,
what words were you saying? Like, were you saying like the S word?
Oh yeah,
S word.
Well, the only limit is my parents did not allow me to say GD.
Yeah, you can't. You still
even though
you
we didn't go to
GD.
Church and they didn't really raise me religious.
Yeah.
That was like off limits. That was like the penultimate.
But you could say the F
don't
word.
Ever, oh yeah, F word wasn't a problem. You know,
were you saying the D word, the P word?
No, I didn't know those words really. I mean, I didn't really know all that. But like basically all the curse words, just not GD.
Okay.
You know, and it was always in response to bullies. Also, kids my own age at that time, like 3rd and 4th grade, they weren't cursing like that. They weren't cursing like that. You know what I mean?
So that was your way of establishing yourself on the totem pole.
You know.
Because you have a potty mouth. Basically, they have to respect you.
Basically.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. You know, like, again, my mother washed my mouth out with soap because I called my cousin the N-word. Of course, I went to private school all my life. I didn't really learn how to cuss until probably, like,
I just love like your ninth little grade. Quaint, like, ninth like grade.
I remember
up.
At one time in first grade, a classmate gave somebody the middle finger. And so my teacher, Ms. Dickerson, asked the class, like, do y'all know what the middle finger means, right? And so we had to line up. And we had to go whisper in her ear what we think that word means. I mean, I thought it was like a small black Catholic school. I thought it was a hoot. It's probably really illegal. But she basically let us all line up and whisper in her ear. And, of course, I said I thought it meant damn.
Oh.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
So
I know, girl. I'm so.
Adorable.
Anyway.
I have never met an
somebody
activist.
Somebody more naive than
I've
me.
Never met a black gay activist, like very left-thinking, radical.
Yes.
Who has come up with such a, like,
baby.
Your childhood was so Pollyanna. I mean, it's so adorable.
I mean, I was still.
It was Pollyanna.
I was getting bucked behind closed doors. Make no mistake, girl. I was still getting bucked.
I know you were
getting
bucked.
I really wasn't.
You weren't.
You know,
I mean,
I
it was
really
basically
wasn't.
Like you didn't watch Menace to Society growing up. You didn't
watch Rated R. I couldn't watch Rated R movies.
Oh, my God.
I didn't curse.
Me either.
You couldn't watch Rated R movies either. Yeah. By the way, y'all, Sasha's still here.
My parents were extremely strict.
Yeah. I couldn't even watch. I could not watch A Living Color.
Oh.
You know, because like, it was like, they had like two shows, like 8 o'clock and 8:30, and then Living Color came on like 9 or 10.
Were you allowed to watch Martin and like stuff like that?
I was a little bit older with Martin. Yeah, I could watch Family Matters, but I could not watch Living Color. I could not watch like Mad TV. You know, my mother, you know, I couldn't watch nothing rated R.
Oh my God.
You know, I didn't know any references or movies you name. I don't be knowing the references.
I just love it. I love it. It's so adorable.
Yeah.
It's so adorable.
Anyway, but all that to say, y'all, I did not cuss on this week's show very much. But anyway, we're out of time. We'll see y'all next week. Again, happy Black History Month.
Yes, happy Black History Month.
All right, Sasha, say goodbye.
Bye-bye, y'all. Appreciate
Doc,
it.
Doc, say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
I've been doing this for a long, long time, man. I got steeds, I got charge, never sleep. I'm in time on your mind, trying to put on for my city. Playing smart, I work hard, living dreams. I'm a star, I got balls. Ain't so holla if you hear me. In the five, on the come up round here, they never come up, trying to inspire mine. So fuck if you don't feel me. I'm giving up on my damn self. Can't go nowhere with that mindset. Still hurting, only 26. Still got the flow, still dropping hits. Fuck all the stress in your dig. Just stick to the message you dig. Appreciate all your blessings and tears. Celebrate everything that you did. I be damn if I ain't proud of me. Look at the presence surrounding me. Ain't no joy like riding a beat. Ain't no love like performing. See, from Louisville to Atlanta. From Nashville to Miami. From Mercury to Headliners, nigga. My man's just sold out the Yum Center. And we ain't supposed to be inspired. Ain't supposed to feel like we all winning. There's too much talent out around here. Success is inevitable with potential. That's why I'm burying all my fears. That's why I'm killing these instrumentals when I'm blowing away to the side.
Strange Fruit is produced by Louisville Public Media. Our producer is Laura Ellis.
For more information, visit strangefruitpod.org. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Strange Fruit Pod.
The views expressed on Strange Fruit do not reflect those of LPM, its staff, or its underwriters.
Our executive producers are me, Jason Gardner.
And me, Kyla Story.
Thanks for listening.